the roof decking, and yours to keep, obviously. Gift from the OU.
One more, I have more that I can give you afterwards. For the past some weeks now, Jewish people have been preoccupied with events that have focused our attention upon Eretz Yisrael and upon Yosheveha, upon those who live there. It's interesting that in each of those weeks, I've been asked to speak in a variety of communities. And sometimes when I have a string of speaking engagements, I can allow myself the opportunity of using last week's speech again this week. But these past few weeks, every week, it's been a different scene, radically different, from hope to disappointment, and now to war and the threat of a larger war. It's impossible to say the same thing each time because it just doesn't fit. And the issues that present themselves are so many that it's impossible to discuss them all, even to touch upon them all, even in a lengthy address, certainly not in just a few moments here this evening. So what I would like to do is just touch upon a few points and deliberately ignore a few important points that I feel much less qualified to comment about, and they are military issues, political issues, media issues. Media especially is exceptionally disappointing, more than we thought throughout this, and I think that's going to get worse because the closer we come to victory, the more we will be made to look as vicious, callous soldiers. So I just want to touch upon a few nekudos. And the nekudos that I'll touch upon are informed by an extremely powerful experience that I was privileged to have. I wish I didn't have that privilege, but I did. Not yet 2 weeks ago, when we learned 2 weeks ago Monday that the boys were dead, killed, and their bodies were recovered. Within a few hours, I received a call from the leadership of the Orthodox Union asking me to fly to Israel and to offer consolation, words of comfort to the three families from, on behalf of the Orthodox Union and basically Orthodox Jews in the United States of America. So I flew out less than 2 weeks ago, Tuesday night, came back Thursday night, and visited the three families in a very powerful, powerful way. I just can't quite process it all. It was such a powerful experience. I could not make the funeral. But I did visit the cemetery the next day and saw the graves of the three boys, and just standing there itself was a powerful, powerful experience. But I'd like to share with you some of the words that I heard at the Botei Ovel. In some cases from the parents themselves, especially the mothers. All three families, it's interesting that the mother of the boy in each family is much more verbal and expressive than the three men, who tend to be rather quiet fellows. But each of them shared with me something else. And I also made it my business to visit those Avelim who were not getting the attention of the hundreds, thousands of people who were visiting. And they are the siblings of the boys. Each of the boys had several, many siblings. And they were kind of shunted off to a corner. Really, their own friends and peers were visiting them, but they weren't getting the kind of attention that the parents were getting. And then there was another group that were really getting no attention. And I identified with them very, very strongly, and those were the grandparents of the boys, who halakhically were not sitting Shiva, but you can be sure were mourning and grieving every bit as much as any of the other Avelim. And personally, as a grandfather of a soldier in Tzahal at this moment, I felt very empathic toward these grandparents who were just really wandering around the premises, kind of talking to whoever they would see, but not literally sitting Shiva. And from all of them, I culled a number of very, very important ideas. One is a powerful one that I'll just touch upon, because you will know much about it. I said to the father of Eyal Yifrach, Hashem Kom Damav, I told him in Ivrit that I'm coming here on behalf of Meot Batei Knesiot Ba'Arzot HaBrit. And he was very moved by that. But sitting next to him was his little 12-year-old son. Looked to me to be 12 years old. Eyal's brother, kid brother. And after our little delegation left the father, I kind of felt I wanted to go over to the boy and kind of connect with him in some way, because he's really being ignored. He's just sitting over on the side, listening to everything, of course, understanding it in his own way, but not really getting the attention, the direct attention of any of the visitors, any of the Menachemim. So I spent a few moments with him, and he turned to me and said, you know, he has a question. Yeshli she'ela. What was the question? He says, I heard what you were telling my father. He says, Yesh me'ot batei knesiot be'arzot HaBrit. There are hundreds of shuls in the United States. He couldn't believe it. And I said, yes, probably many more than hundreds. So he said, why don't they come here? What are they doing there? Bakola, what are they doing there? It was just a fascinating experience. And of course, I heard it as a critique in a certain sense, but also as an invitation. You guys all belong here. And I told him that he was very right and that I would spread his message, you know, that almost every time I've spoken since then, I've mentioned this little anecdote on his behalf. I promised him, I'll do what I can to bring those hundreds of shuls here. I just want to mention that. But there was something else that came up from three or four of the parents, grandparents of the boys, that really some of them realized immediately. And that is that from the beginning, and certainly at this point, we realize this is not a simple affair. This is not a black and white, yes or no situation. This is not, it has already obviously not been a 6-day war, and it's going to be over in a flash, and that's the end of it. It's not going to be that. It's going to be part of a very long, complex, difficult, ambiguous process. Rabbi Blass alluded to the question, which we're all haunted by. I've spoken about it several times already. You can see both of those talks on the OU website. I gave two talks entitled, Were Our Tears Shed in Vain? Part one, part two. Part one before I met the parents. Part two, when I returned. Interestingly, nowadays with so much electronic communication, I've got a number of complaints of how can I even give that title to a talk. That is blasphemous to even ask the question, were our tears shed in vain? And yet, many of our Nevi'im and many Psukim and Tehillim ask that same question. It's a fair question to ask. To ask of oneself, to ask of the Ribono Shel Olam. But if you follow the news from the very beginning, especially Mrs. Frankel, who really has emerged as a heroine in this entire saga, And she was careful to tell people, especially children, I'm very concerned, you're crying, you're begging God now. Don't lose your faith if your prayers are not answered. At some level, I don't know what she knew, what they told her, what she didn't know. There's all sorts of speculation about that from the beginning of her ordeal. But she was sensitive to know, to realize, this is not going to be simple. It may have great frustration and disappointment and tragic, tragic failure. But this is part of one huge, huge process, which you can call Jewish history. You can call the whole Jewish experience. It's not something that it's cured overnight. And in the culture that we live in, we are so accustomed to instant information, instant gratification. Kids these days don't do research. You want to find out about whatever. You Google it, and you have all the information that took us days of library research, if you remember, way back when. It wasn't so far, so long ago. So we think that's the way the world works. You know, you press a button and give a prayer and the prayer is answered. You say exactly the right kapitel tehillim, or you light exactly the right number of candles, or you wear the right red ribbon around your wrist and boom, all your problems are resolved. And that's not the way it is. Tefillah is not a matter of, I need something, I pray, God answers and that's it. Tefillah is a lifelong process of confrontation and struggling and wrestling with the Ribono Shel Olam. Sometimes he answers us in dramatic ways that we couldn't anticipate, wonderful ways, and sometimes he drives us into a rage against him. And that's what the life of tefillah is. And this war too, and it's interesting that the Prime Minister said this from the very beginning, this is not going to be over quickly. It's not going to be over quickly. It's a part of a long struggle. Yes, that's disappointing, but it's also in a certain way uplifting because it plugs us in to the entire experience of what this is all about. This is not just something that's happening here in the year Tavshanai and Dalin. This is part of a whole process that hopefully will end very, very quickly. But it's a part of a process. It's not simple. Nothing is simple in life in general, and certainly in Jewish life. It's interesting because you've seen headlines in all sorts of journals and magazines, etc. The three boys who brought us all together. Yes, they brought us closer to the ideal of being together. But we are not yet together, right? Don't delude yourself into thinking, wow, three boys were killed and now, terrific, we're all ba'achdut. We're not ba'achdut. Politically, it's all sorts of rumblings in the Israeli government, falling apart, etc. In the midst of all this, not everyone agrees the same thing. I couldn't distribute the tefillah for the chayalim in every shul in Muncie because Gandhi wouldn't permit it. We're still not ba'achdut. Far, far from it. We took maybe a few steps, we got a glimmer. It's much more complicated than that. You don't achieve victory nowadays militarily in an instant, and even in 6 days, and you don't achieve achdut in an instant. It's much more complicated and much more difficult, and it calls for much, much more work and investment, etc. One phrase, it's a sentence, I don't know where it comes from or who wrote it, but I've seen that sign now, a sentence in a number of different sources. It originally came to my attention when I was entering the premises of where the Frankels live in Nofi Alon. And the sentence read, Am HaNetzach Lo Mefached Miderech Aruka. The Am HaNetzach, the eternal people, is not afraid of the long road. Not afraid of the long road. The road is long, the road is complex, the road has its ups and downs and twists and turns. But since we are an Am HaNetzach, we are an eternal nation. We've been in existence 3,700 years and we'll be in existence LeNetzach Netzachim. And the road is long. It's been very long and it's been full of catastrophe and calamity and tragedy, and it's been full of inspiration and excitement and things to celebrate. It's a long road. And the Am HaNetzach lo mefached miderech arukah. The eternal nation, once we have this consciousness, we are an eternal nation. And even when we have terrible, terrible setbacks, we're not afraid of them because it's a long road and we know it and we keep on traveling and pushing in that road. It's a very powerful six-word slogan of some sort that deserves thinking about. I came across Rabbanit Sohar sent out just before Shabbos in Israel a little pamphlet of guidelines for Rabbanim. Many, many Rabbanim, Rabbanit Sohar, Sohar is a rabbinic organization that's especially helpful to rabbis who do what we call in the States pastoral work. So what is a rabbi supposed to say Shabbos yesterday if he's the rabbi of Kiryat Malachi or the rabbi of Sderot or a rabbi in the shul in Yerushalayim when there's rockets falling all around? And there's a very, very helpful little pamphlet. There's an article there by a psychologist of what to say, how to deal with trauma. Very, very helpful. And I came across one paragraph there that really, really hit home, and I'd like to share it with you. My apologies to those who may have heard me speak yesterday Shabbos in the retreat that the OU had, because I'm going to repeat myself. But Baruch Hashem, it wasn't recorded, so I feel that it's proper for me to repeat this again. And it's worth repeating in any case. Whoever wrote this, and it's not signed, says, people ask, Mayi Yasof, what's going to be the end? Anashim Shoalim, Mayi Yabasof, what's going to be? What's going to be? Where is all this heading? The writer writes, Ha'ameti Shezo Hasheela Hakala. That's the easy question. What's going to be Basof? Because he writes, we know what's going to be Basof. He said the bracha Shabbos after the Haftorah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Nevi'ei HaEmes VaHatzedek, and he promised us that Dover Echad Midvorecha Lo Yoshuv Reikom. Everything that he said by the Nevi'im will not be in vain. It will all come true. The truth is, we've already seen so much of it come true. Much more miraculous things have happened to the Jewish people in the past 60 or 70 years than victory over a bunch of terrorists. That would be small change compared to some of the miracles we've already experienced, some of the prophecies that have already come true. The Nevi'im speak of Kibbutz Galios. We've seen Kibbutz Galios. The Nevi'im speak about the hills of Shomron being full of grain and crops and vineyards. We've seen that too. Navi Zechariah, my favorite passage, one of my favorite passages, is speak of the time when old men, old women sit in the parks of Yerushalayim and watch kids play. And every time I go to Yerushalayim, I sit and watch the kids around the corner play. So those Nevi'im have all come true. Those Nevi'us have all come true. And Dover Echad Midvarecha Lo Yashuv Echor Lo Yashuv Reikam. It will all, that's the Sof. The question, he says, is how long will it be until we reach that Sof? And what else do we have to go through until we reach the Sof? But the Sof, he writes, is Batuach. That's Batuach, as he puts it, Ein Davar Batuach Mimenu Ba'olam. There's nothing more sure than the wonderful, wonderful ending that lies at the door. We just hope that that ending is soon, soon to be. One of the things one has to do in dealing with this type of threat and danger and the fear that we all feel, now there's an app that many people have where you can actually hear in real time every siren, that every code red that goes off in Israel. You'll hear your little gadget will give a little beep and you'll hear the siren in real time. By the way, that was one of the accomplishments of the public relations people in Israel because they gave that app to every single reporter. They may not use it to reporters. Every single reporter in all the United States media and in Western Europe media. So they can hear in real time every rocket as it comes in. So it's scary times. But one has to look for the times of light and hope in the midst of these. And the media are just full of stories. But there's one that just really struck me as being very, very special. It's a story of a chatan v'kala, Sapir, it's the woman, bride, and Shaul, Shauli, his surname is Tavitu. Tet, vov, vov, yud, tet, vov, yud. Tavitu, Tavutu. And they were supposed to get married last Tuesday night. And they were expecting their relatives to come to Netivot, where they live. Netivot is what they call in newspapers the south of Israel. And it's under rocket attack. Neighbors are coming from, families coming from all over the country. And the roads are blocked. They can't get there. Traffic, sirens, code red here, code red there. The family, immediate family even, could not get to Netivot. And they're wondering what they're going to do, what's going to be with the wedding. And many, many things happened because the community chipped in all sorts of ways. The most dramatic is the Rosh Yeshiva, the Yeshivat Hezder and the Tivot, told the Bochurim, close the Gemaras, and we're all going to the wedding. So they had a couple of hundred boys. They all went to the wedding. They danced and they sang. They had their own little homemade band. They played music, etc., etc. And they ate and drank too, I'm sure. And they made simcha the whole time. And they had the chasana, Baruch Hashem, now they're married, etc. So the new chatan, Shauli Tavito, sent out on his Facebook a thank you, which is just a beautiful, heart-rending thank you, how he says, I want to thank everybody, and especially the Talmidei Yeshivat HaHezder and the Tivot, She'azvu HaKol, Uba'ula Asot Sameach, Ein Aleichem Ba'ulam. There's nobody like you guys. Came to my wedding, I don't know you, you don't know me. Gave me the Simchas Chosan V'Kala. You know, the Gemara tells us, if you help a Chosan V'Kala have Simcha, then it's Ke'ilu Bona Churva Achas Bechuvos Yerushalayim. It's like rebuilding Yerushalayim right there, and they did it. So he thanked them. Now this kind of thing doesn't go viral in the same ways as some other events go viral. I'm sure that many more people have on their Facebook the fact that Germany just won the World Cup than the ones who have paid attention to his message on the Facebook, which is so moving. But it did go kind of viral in the, at least among Israelis, and he was so thankful. He said, I just sent this Facebook out to, you know, a couple of friends. And now I see the whole country is excited about the fact that this is how we celebrated our wedding. So then he puts up another thing on his Facebook, which reads as follows. Todah Rabba, Mamash Kip, you know, the Israelis have a word, Chaf Yud Fei. You know, it's a word, it's not a Hebrew word, but it means it's great, terrific, cool. Lirot et ha-hitchashvut shel kulam. So good to see that you all care about me. I'm a plain old guy in the Tivot, all of a sudden I'm famous, it's wonderful. Mamash margishim she'anachnu chelek mimishpacha gedola. I feel that we're all part of one big family. B'chlal, kol hazman, anashim mitkashvim, matziyim ezra, people give us help, they give us help, etc. It's just wonderful. Zechut lehiyot chelek me'am Yisrael. It's a privilege to be part of the Jewish nation. And this feeling is something that you can only bottle it and preserve it, because we all feel it at this time. Right now we feel it in our tefillos, in our prayers, in our sorrow, in our worry, in our anxiety. But amid Hashem, we will feel it in a simcha, which will be a simchas chosam v'kala, when the ultimate chosam v'kala, the Ribono Shel Olam and Am Yisrael, get together and have the simcha. We have to really be margish, as he puts it, she'anachnu chelek mimishpacha gedola. We're part of one big family. And as we have tefillos now, we're praying for our brothers, cousins, in some cases you are praying for your brothers, cousins, nephews, grandson, etc. But even if we're a little bit more distantly related, we're still part of one mishpacha gedola. I want to thank you over the blast for giving me the opportunity to repeat some of my speech from Shabbos.
Before people leave, maybe we can do a few prakim of Tehillim. People have their siddurim with them. First of all, thank you, Weiner, so much for those uplifting words.